Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show, and I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. We had a major development at the state capitol here in Michigan, where over 7,000 people showed up for a demonstration to talk about the EFM, the Emergency Financial Manager, who has will become a dictator. We have one here in the city of Benton Harbor, and we're planning a demonstration on March the 16th at 10:30 a.m. at the City Hall here, because Harbor Shores, Whirlpool, and the PGA will do a ribbon cutting, and we plan on doing a poster cutting to show them that we can meet with them or we can match them, everything that they can do. But at this time, we're going to listen to a little Martin Luther King, and then we'll bring on our co-host. Interesting. Well, I always... Like I said, we will be listening to a little Martin Luther King.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My Country, 'Tis of Thee." Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California, but not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring. And when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. Before we bring on our co-host, Larry Pinckney, I've got to read this important, very important memo that was sent to me from Whirlpool. You're going to love this. It says to Cornerstone Alliance Board of Directors, Cornerstone Chambers of Commerce Board of Directors, Cornerstone Chambers of Commerce Ambassadors, local elected officials, and the steward of Michigan Great Southwestern, and Reverend Edward Pinckney. It says you are invited to a ribbon-cutting ceremony for the 212 Senior PGA Championship office, the new office that will be opened. The office of the Senior PGA Championship are located at 101 West Main Street in the city of Benton Harbor. We will be opening a new office in the city of Benton Harbor, and we want everyone to come. It's going to be Wednesday, March 16, 2011. They're going to cut the ribbon at 11:30, and we're going to be there to cut some of our signs. But what makes this so interesting, why would they send a guy like me? They know that I'm not their favorite person. Larry, you may be able to answer this before you come on. Why would they send me something like this?
Well, you know, I guess they figured it was no harm in trying, adding insult to injury.
Yes. And I guess what we're going to do when we have our signs, and we got signs telling the GPA, shame, shame, shame on you, GPA, PGA, and shame on you, Whirlpool. And we got plenty other signs that we made up. Me and Dorothy did the work. The man, you know, if it's going to be done, it's got to be done by us. They'll march, but they're not going to make no signs, you know. But listen, that's enough about Ben Harbor. Larry, introduce yourself. Let the people know who you are.
Well, sure, good to be on the program again with you, my brother. I'm Larry Pinckney, of course, co-host with the Pinckney and Pinckney program. And my background, very briefly, is that I'm a veteran of the Black Panther Party, former regional minister of Interior for the Republic of New Africa. I am the only quote-unquote American who has successfully self-authored a case to the United Nations under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. And I currently continue to be a political activist fighting in the struggle for human rights and justice. I am a writer, editorial board member, and columnist with the Black Commentator, www.blackcommentator.com. That's it. The struggle continues.
That's right. And, you know, and that's beautiful, Larry. And I tell you, I just can't get enough of that documentary that you know. And they got you right in the middle of it. I mean, I tell you this, people have been calling me. I sent it out to people. They've been calling me and talking about it. I tell you, Larry, it's tremendous. If it's not tremendous, I'm sure not going to tell you. But I tell you what, Larry, it's great. I'm so proud of you. I don't know what to tell you. I
well,
tell
thank
you,
you.
Hit the nail right on the head. And
well, brother,
have you looked at yourself?
Well, I only watched the film once. I do need to go back and watch it again to with a notepad and pencil, or pencil and pad, I should say.
Well, I got you 3-1 then. You got to catch up with me, brother.
That's right. That's right. I can tell you that. I can tell you that. Thus far, the film has received thousands and thousands and thousands of people, viewers have been watching it, and it's increasing nationally and internationally all over the planet. The film we're talking about for our listening audience is the film entitled Lifting the Veil. Lifting the Veil. It's a Scott Noble Metanoia. That's M as in Mary, E-T-A-N-O-I-A. It's a Scott Noble Metanoia film, Lifting the Veil. I would urge, I would strongly urge and encourage all of our listeners to please go online and look at Lifting the Veil. Once you start looking at it, you will not be able to stop until its conclusion.
And Larry, I agree with you 100%. Beautiful. Well done. You did an excellent job. Matter of fact, you took your time and you explained your point so perfectly, you know. I said, I just had to take my hat off to you, man, because I tell you, it was just that tremendous. And I believe that anybody who watched that, they know it's going to hit the nail right on the head. You was right there. Man, that's tremendous, Larry. Hey, but listen, let's get into our show. So we don't have a whole lot of time, but let's use what we got.
Okay. Okay. I'll move right on. I want to talk about a sister, a woman by the name of Asata Shakur. So can I go right into that, my brother?
Absolutely.
Okay. There's a book entitled Asata Shakur. Let me spell it. That's A-S-S-A-T-A, last name Shakur, S-H-A-K-U-R. The book is titled Asata Shakur. Get it. Read it. Anyway, let me tell our audience a little bit about Sister Asata. Asata Shakur was on the 2nd of May in 1973, she was pulled over by the New Jersey State Police. She was shot twice, and then she was charged with murder of a police officer. She is a Black Panther Party veteran, and as a result of having been pulled over and shot, and again, twice by these police, Asata spent 6.5 years in prison under incredibly horrible circumstances before she escaped from prison out of the maximum security wing of the Clinton Correctional Facility for Women. That was in New Jersey, and that occurred in 1979, and she fled to Cuba, and I want to be very brief, but I think our audience should understand that Sister Asata continues to be active in Cuba. She has taught university, the University of Havana. She continues to write and to speak out on both national and international issues. And I want to just very briefly read to our audience something, very briefly. In her own words, she says, "My name is Asata." The word Asata, the name Asata, means, quote, "she who struggles," unquote. "My name is Asata Shakur. The last name Shakur, S-H-A-K-U-R, means the thankful one." She says, "I am a 20th and 21st century escaped slave. Because of government persecution, I was left with no other choice than to flee from the political repression, racism, and violence that dominate the U.S. government's policies towards people of color. I am an ex-political prisoner, and I have been living in exile in Cuba since 1984. I have been a political activist most of my life, And although the U.S. government has done everything in its power to criminalize me, and let me add quickly, including just a short time ago, a few years ago, they put $1 million bounty, can you believe that, on her head. Anyway,
$1 million.
She says, $1 million bounty. So much for justice. I guess we're back to bounty hunters. I guess we never left. Anyway, she says she's been a political activist. She says, I've been a political activist most of my life, and although the U.S. government has done everything in its power to criminalize me, I am not a criminal, nor have I ever been. In the 1960s, I participated, she says, in various struggles, the Black Liberation Movement, the Student Rights Movement, and the movement to end the war in Vietnam. I joined the Black Panther Party, she says. By 1969, the Black Panther Party had become the number one organization targeted by the FBI's infamous COINTELPRO, counterintelligence program. I know our audience has heard about COINTELPRO, COINTELPRO. And because the Black Panther Party demanded the total liberation of black people, then FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover called it, quote, this is in Nassada's own words, called it, quote, the greatest threat to the internal security of the country, and vowed to destroy it and its leaders and activists. And that's all I'm going to read in her own words. But
yeah.
Asata sums it up. The struggle today continues. Asata cannot obviously return. She is, in fact, in exile and therefore a prisoner, but not a prisoner in Cuba, but in exile from this country. Cuba has treated her with the utmost respect because the Cuban people and the Cuban government are cognizant, they are aware of the repression against black, white, brown, red, and yellow peoples in this country. I also would like to emphasize that Asata, as our audience I'm sure knows, does not stand alone. We discussed in one of our programs a political prisoner by the name of Sundiata Akoli. Some of our listeners will probably remember that. Well, Sundiata is spoken of very highly by Asata Shakur, and she says about him, she says, I want so much for Sundiata to know how much he is loved and respected. Now, Sundiata, of course, a political prisoner for many, many years. I want him to know how much he is appreciated by revolutionaries all over the world. I want Sundiata to know how much he is cherished by African people, not only in the Americas, but all over the diaspora. I want him to know how much we admire his strength, his courage, his kindness, and compassion. Sundiata loves freedom, and we must struggle for the life and freedom of Sundiata. You may, end of quote, you may recall that Comrade Sister Kilu Unyasha, who's on our show on a regular basis, speaks of Sundiata Akoli quite a lot, and spoke of Brother Sundiata when she was on one of the programs. And we'll of course, be having Sister Kilu back very shortly on one of our next programs. In any event, back to Sister Asata. Asata represents one of many, many, many women who have been very, very active. And I don't mean when I say active, I'm not talking about no jive. I'm talking about seriously struggling for the human rights of poor and oppressed peoples in this nation. I mean, a lot of people, unfortunately, forget that our sisters, rank and file, as well as in the leadership of the position, have given their ultimate. Without the sisters, there would have been and will be no struggle without our sisters, without women across the board. So when we speak of black, white, brown, red, yellow peoples, we are talking about women, our sisters, as well as men. And Asata Shakur is a shining example of woman power, sisterhood. She is a shining example of someone like Comrade Sister Kilu Unyasha, of someone who, you know, who refuses to give up. In fact, not only does she not give up, she intensifies in the struggle to try and educate the people wherever she may be and wherever we may be.
Larry, let me ask you a question, Larry. Why don't you explain to the audience what COINTELPRO really is? I think that is crucial because a lot of times people don't really know what that means.
Okay. Good point. Thank you. Thank you, Reverend Pinckney. Mm-hmm. COINTELPRO is spelled COINT, as in Turkey, PELPRO, COINTELPRO. It stands for Counterintelligence Program. It was a program that was set up by the United States government, okay, back in the 60s, and it was specifically set up to, quote, and I'm quoting directly from U.S. congressional records, to frame, to murder, to discredit, and to imprison political activists. This is a direct quote. This program was used to imprison and or kill thousands upon thousands of political activists in the United States. So every time you hear someone say COINTELPRO, you can actually go to the U.S. congressional records and find information on COINTELPRO, though the corporate stream media is going to say little or nothing about the program. Now, our position is that COINTELPRO continues, okay? The congressional records say they don't know whether it continued or not, but it's obvious that the program continues. One of the things that COINTELPRO made crystal clear in the files of COINTELPRO, what this program is about, they said, and I want to quote this, that they would never allow a, quote, black messiah to rise again unless they, meaning the government, these corporations, unless they created him. Think about that when you think about Barack Obama. Think about that. Now, I'm quoting directly from U.S. congressional records on what COINTELPRO actually said. They would never allow a quote-unquote black messiah. And they were talking about people who would stand up and struggle for the human rights and justice, not only for black people, but for people poor and oppressed across the board. They would never let such a person exist unless what? They created him, and therefore they created him. He or she would by no means be struggling for the justice and human rights of people across the board. No way. So I want people to remember this. COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program. Look it up. It's easy. Just Google it. COINTELPRO. One other very quick point about COINTELPRO. COINTELPRO has now been codified legally. When I say codified, all I mean is that it has now been made official in the Patriot Act, the so-called Patriot Act, which Obama has continued. The Patriot Act, as our audience may already know, is an act which destroys any so-called constitutional rights that we may have in this country, all in the name of protecting the people of this country. What the Patriot Act actually does is it disenfranchises, it takes away any legal, political rights that people may have, all in the name of supposedly or allegedly protecting them / us. So COINTELPRO has now actually been codified, all right, in the Patriot, into what is now called the Patriot Act. Our audience needs to keep that in mind. So this is how slick and how insidious, how devilish, if you will, the corporate government that we have and their representatives, how insidious they really are. So
wow.
I'll leave it at that for now, my brother.
Also, tell us about that $1 million bounty they got out on this wonderful young lady. I read about that a couple of years back about they having a $1 million bond, bounty on her.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about
mm-hmm.
that.
Well, you know, I don't know how many of folks in our audience might remember a show that came on, a television show, a shoot 'em up cowboy television show called Wanted Dead or Alive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody, okay? And in that show, what it talked about or what it showed was how people would be hunted down. Now, whether these people had gotten a trial, whether these people had received any kind of fair hearing was irrelevant. Whether these people had escaped from slavery or whatever was irrelevant. They sent out bounty hunters. That's what the show talked about. And I believe it was actually called Bounty Hunter, Wanted
mm-hmm.
Dead or Alive.
Yeah.
And this is precisely, in the 21st century, what the United States government has done in the case of Sister Asata Shakur. The Department of Justice, okay, working with other departments of the United States government, actually put out a bounty. Can you believe that? A bounty on the life of Sister Asata Shakur. In other words, they want to kill her. They said, we'll bring her back dead or alive, but if you kill her, if you bring her back dead or alive, you will get $1 million. This is why I don't often use the word devilish, but that's
mm-hmm.
devilish. And
yeah.
and it's sadistic, as Sister Kilu. That's a better word, actually. Sadistic. It's sadistic,
mm-hmm.
As Sister Kilu would say. And,
can you
and
believe
this
that, though?
Is what,
can you believe that in Monday history that they will put a bounty out on someone on this level?
Yes. It's utterly not only repugnant and reprehensible, but
mm-hmm.
it's utterly unacceptable. And when people say that we are not slaves, black, white, brown, red, or yellow folk, when they say that we are not slaves, they are mistaken. We are slaves as long as we allow ourselves and our so-called our government to do these outrageous things that they do. And this is just one very small example in the case of the $1 million bounty on our beloved Sister Asata.
Larry, you got about 2 minutes. Why don't you just say something, then we can go into our Lynn Stewart moment.
Okay. I want to, as always, I want to thank all of our audience across the board, black, white, brown, red, yellow folk, all of you. I want to thank you all so much for tuning into and listening to the Pinkney to Pinkney radio program. I want to say, as I always say, all power to the people, that this is a collective struggle. It's not a me struggle. It is a we struggle. And we hope that you will continue to tune in, continue to remember that you are part of this struggle. And with that, if it's all right with you, my brother, what I would do, Reverend Pinkney, is go right into what we term the Lynn Stewart moment.
And Larry, I can say you go right ahead, and I just do want to say this. I am so proud of what the Black Panther Party accomplished and what they have done. They have set the tone for what we are doing today. And Larry, we want to thank you, and we just want to thank all the members of the Black Panther Party. And I just want to say, power to the people. Go right ahead, Larry. Go right ahead.
All power to the people. Right on, my brother. Well, we're going to move right on to the segment of the program that we call the Lynn Stewart Moment. Speaking of political prisoners, Lynn Stewart is 71 years old. Yes, 71 years old. She's a grandmother. And she's a beloved, outspoken people's lawyer, not just any lawyer, people's lawyer. She is in prison as a result of trumped-up charges having been brought against her by the United States government. These charges were, quote, conspiracy in providing material support to terrorists, unquote. Of course, any thinking person knows that those charges would fit directly on the government itself, not on Lynn Stewart. Anyway, Sister Lynn Stewart is both feared and hated by government authorities because of her tireless efforts as an attorney to successfully, and I emphasize successfully, because she was serious about defending clients who were political activists and others whom the government deemed as undesirable and or enemies of the state. Lynn Stewart has been in prison now for going on 2 years, certainly well over a year. She's currently serving an outrageous and sadistic 10-year sentence at Carswell, that's C-A-R-S-W-E-L-L, Carswell Federal Prison near Fort Worth, Texas. But for a more specific update on our beloved sister Lynn Stewart, we're going to turn now to her lifelong companion and husband, Brother Ralph Poynter. Brother Ralph.
Hey, Larry, thank you. Thank you, Reverend. It's great. I always enjoy listening to you two open the program with so much information. And, you know, Larry, I was listening to your and Reverend about your description of lifting the veil. It is difficult to ignore. It's difficult to put down. You don't have to say how long it is. Once you turn this on, you will not be able to turn it off until you've seen the whole thing. And when you were talking about the COINTELPRO program and the statements of J. Edgar Hoover, I'd like to add a statement to that. That is, the greatest threat to internal security of the U.S. is its practices of injustice at home and abroad. And when I think of the people talking about how United States and France are going to help Libya, it's almost a joke. But I'm glad that it has fooled no one. All you have to do is see what France and the United States are helping people. Just see what they're doing in Haiti. Baby Doc is home, and Aristide is still there, and Aristide got 77% of the vote. You know, this is how they help. They want to help themselves to the Libyan oil. So everybody is rightfully suspicious of America. But as for Lynn, and I'm going to give it again, Lynn Stewart, the Federal Medical Center, Carswell, 53504-054, Unit 2N, P.O. Box 27137, Fort Worth, Texas, 76127. And Lynn played a role in the struggle of the Panthers and the Black Liberation Army by defending the righteous people who were working for justice. And that, in the government's mind, criminalized her. And then when she continued working for people around the world who were looking for justice, and it makes me so happy when I see that the United States did these plots. The Landmarks was directly involved, the security apparatus of Egypt, wanting to put the blind sheikh out of business, and they hired a gentleman named Emad Salem, who was a spy working for the FBI and the Egyptian government to ensnare the blind sheikh, and Lynn defended them. Therefore, she is an expert on the role of the United States and Egypt in this fake program of terror in America. And so they had to put her away. They didn't need her going around, as the Second Circuit stated, corrupting our youth. And I must repeat, as I said to Lynn, well, now you are in the category of Jesus and Socrates. That's the charge they got against him, or them, corrupting our youth. That is, when you start telling the truth and it upsets those in power, you know, this is the first thing they jump to. And, you know, I was going to, you know, Lynn is being spoken of worldwide in terms of Mumia. And she had written a letter, you know, to an organization in Germany. And they were talking about political prisoners worldwide. They want to honor Lynn. And she wrote a state. And I'm going to save it till next week to talk to you about, you know, they're honoring her. And when you get on that list of political prisoners, and when you read that list, I'm going to put it out on the on Lynn Stewart's email. It may be there right now. When you see that list, you'll see these wonderful people who gave up so much for all of us to get closer to the dream of justice. Now, how is Lynn? People ask the question, and I say, all things considered, consider that she's in jail, consider that she has a 10-year sentence for merely telling the truth, and that no one was ever hurt, and that I already explained why the government wants to keep her in jail. While they're stealing our homes, and while they're stealing the national larder and giving it to the wealthy, while they're moving the money from the bottom upward, while they're doubling the price of gas, they have to keep us preoccupied. And they keep hollering, terror, 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 just like we've experienced when they hollered, commie, 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 just like we experienced when they hollered, nigger, nigger, nigger. And all of those who went for it are still right where they were at the time the lies were being spread, the hate was being spread. They're on the bottom. But the sad thing is today, they're going to bring us all down to the bottom. We're 37th in everything, and things that the United States used to be first in. That means America is quickly becoming a third world country, and the rich will have it all, and we will have our hatreds and our misinformation, our disinformation. But Lynn is Lynn, and it's, I guess, for a person of privilege. And one of the things she's always said, white Americans have skin privilege. And she says, life pretty decent. So she has been a person of skin privilege. And she says, although you go to jail, her work took her to jail, it didn't prepare her for being in jail. And she always laughed at me, and she says, well, you're more educated than I am because you are having lived the life of a person of color in America. The realities of America are brought to you constantly. And if you're white, the realities of America are not brought to you constantly, not until you go up against the forces that control this government. Not until you begin to support the poor, not until you begin to support people of color, not until you begin to support those people who have the interest of all of us at heart. So Lynn she's gotten over her shock of being in jail, and she is working, and she's asking me and everyone else to begin to think about women in prison. She says, we talk about men in prison. We talk about the numbers of our youth in prison. We talk about the war on African Americans fronted by the so-called war on drugs, which there isn't. Now, she says, look around you, when I walked in to visit her in the visiting room. And she says, look at the children who have come to see their mothers. And because she is being one of the finest jailhouse lawyers ever, she reads all of the papers of the people who are in jail. And she says, first off, the important thing you notice is these women are no threat to anybody. But she says, many of them are there because of poorly prepared papers by the lawyers. And she tells me when I speak out and when I go speak in her place at various functions, she says, I must report this. Many women are in jail many people are in jail because of poor work, lack of consideration by the attorneys. Now, we know the legal aid attorneys are overburdened, and she says, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about lawyers who got money as high as $100,000, $200,000, and just didn't do the work. And families sell their homes, do whatever they can, and pay the attorneys, and she says, and they still do not get the work done. So she's encouraging us to begin to write to everybody and she hasn't finalized it in her mind the best way to attack this problem, but to recognize how many people are in jail, particularly women. And we're talking about celebrating women. We're talking about celebrating workers, celebrating the poor. She says we must do more than celebrate them. We must do work for them. And in the letter that she wrote to the organization in Berlin, she talks about the need, the uprising that people will be working on around the world to make things better. So she's in jail. She's concerned about all of us out here. And this is why he said, this is the thing about Lynn, you know and you love. She's in jail. What is she worried about? She says, these poor young people are in jail. And I think I mentioned the young lady last week. And she's involved in writing a play about her life. Just a brief one-woman show that this woman will talk about her life. And she kind of epitomizes those who don't understand, those who have been oppressed, those who have been kicked around all of their life and end up in jail spending basically 19 of her 38 years in jail. And she says, what a terrible injustice. And when I'm there and I'm listening to her tell me the stories, is she complaining about Lynn? No, she's telling me stories of other women. And when I'm there, the last time I was there, I had to say, listen, Lynn, just stop, please. You know, this is too much. And she says quickly, you know, I have lived a good life. What can I do? I've had skin privilege. What can they do to me? And she says, they can't hurt what I've already had, the wonderful life I've had. They can't take that back. And she's spending the rest of it supporting other people. So that's
Ralph. Ralph, can you have you got about 2 minutes, but could you have Lynn to send us somebody's name who she might want us to feature on the show? And you got about 2 minutes. Why don't you tell us, give Lynn address again, and anything else you want to say, just go right ahead.
Okay. Please, and one of the wonderful things about Lynn, you will get to know her through her your letters to her. And don't be afraid to write the letter, because they have all of our names and address in some book someplace. So just write to Lynn Stewart, Federal Medical Center, Carswell, Carswell, 53504-054, Unit 2N, P.O. Box 27137, Fort Worth, Texas, 76127. And she just has so many wonderful things to say about so much, so informative. So just write to her and say whatever is in your heart, and she will answer you. And she apologizes for the prison mail system. They held up much of her mail and then give it to her in bunches, and then she gets behind in answering people. But if you've written to her, be patient. She will write back. Thanks again so much for listening.
All right, Ralph. You take care of yourself. Mary, are you there?
I am here, Reverend Pinckney. How are you?
I'm great.
Praise God. Reverend Pinckney, I so much thank you for the opportunity to speak to the audience a few minutes. There are lots of important things to tell the audience. For one thing, before I start, though, I want to go on record as protesting Facebook not letting me, or the cyber stalkers, not letting me communicate with cops against the death penalty on Facebook. There are policemen, there are prison guards, there are judges, there are people who God has placed in positions of power that do have their mind and their hearts in the right place. And what they do is, as Mr. Porter said, they run interference. They do not want unity among the people. They want us to look at each other as the enemy. All policemen are not our enemy. Some policemen are against the death penalty, and they're standing against it, and they will not let me communicate with them. Also, sir, I want to say to the audience that that right now I wrote an article this week called NAACP versus Black Cigarette Smokers. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't need any more laws, any more war against drugs to encompass cigarette smokers. My goodness, we have 2.3 million people in jail, and the interesting thing is that the NAACP said they want to outlaw menthol in cigarettes. Now, that's 80% of the black smokers who smoke menthol. So this is the law that will be targeting us who smoke Newport, Kool, any of your black relatives who smoke. I mean, they want more nonviolent prisoners in jail. So I wrote an article called NAACP versus Black Cigarette Smokers. Please look it up. I want to say that we're pushing ahead with the boycott for justice. Every unjust decision, whether it's to incarcerate people as many as possible, whether it is to launch a war, whether it is to lessen environmental protections, whether it is to do away with unions, whether it is to outsource jobs overseas into prisons, every unjust a corporate entity that benefits from it. So let's get home to where it is. Please don't shop on the 9th of any month throughout 2011. On the 9th. And why? Because we're saying we're going to do a 9/11 response to corporate greed and government indifference. What will happen? What will happen? We wake up one day on the 9th of the month and the mall's open and nobody goes. If the car dealership's open and nobody goes, the grocery stores, gasoline tanks, don't buy anything on the night. Now, that's not to destroy the economy. We all rest on this economy. We need to keep our jobs. We need things to improve. So what we're saying is buy what you want on the 8th, buy on the 10th. We're going to not shop on the 9th because we're going to show a united stand against corporate greed. 9/11, every 9, every 9/11, don't shop.
That's beautiful, Mary.
The people's response.
And we're going to keep that message out there as long as we can and see where we're at. Libby, are you there?
Yes. I'm calling in today because, the topic that I'm interested in at this point is everything all the stuff you guys have been talking about, but the issue I'm calling about is journalistic propaganda. In Bering County, Michigan, the Whirlpool Company papers, the Herald Palladium, and there is one in particular reporter there who is just a genius almost at spreading propaganda. And we see on bhbanco.org that somebody has tried to sort of explain the way she does it. So it says, Julie Swedwa, Herald Palladium, quote, reporter, unquote, is expert in making up stories out of nearly nothing. In this case, and what they mean by this case is an article that came out on March 2nd called Cracked Windshield Leads to Chase and Four Car Wreck in Benton Harbor. In this case, Ms. Swedwa is able to draw out and sensationalize the story of a man with a cracked car windshield being chased at high speed through Benton Harbor, Michigan, by a cop. Not that there isn't reason to report this event, but her take on it is to demonize yet another Benton Harbor resident and emphasize criminality in every small crevice of the actions of a poor, living on the edge Benton Harbor resident. You yes. Go, Julie. What a brilliant career you've created for yourself, convincing readers that Benton Harbor is nothing but a crime scene filled with, quote, throwaway people, unquote. Going by the article's tone, one would think a world-class crime syndicate started operating in Benton Harbor. On and on she can go, enlarging details which will keep Benton Harbor residents in fear. The real story needing to be honestly reported in Bering County is about cops out of control, a court system acting illegally on a daily basis, a population under siege, and desperate poverty where jobs have been outsourced. Can anyone imagine in their wildest dreams cops setting a dog on a St. Joseph, Michigan resident. That's a neighboring town. Swedwa is one of the prime players in the creation of institutionalized racism in St. Joseph and Benton Harbor. Institutionalized racism is the mission statement of the Herald Palladium, quote, newspaper, unquote. So that's that. And then the article is here, and you can just see an absolutely perfect example of propaganda, yellow journalism. There are other names for it. And I remember a couple years ago, the person who runs the website, narconews.com, a writer, I'm forgetting his name. Anyways, he came out saying, I no longer think government is the enemy. The enemy is the media. Now, that's his opinion, but he's got a point. Because as long as we're not being told the truth,
yes,
you know, what can we do about the government? So, anyway,
right.
And then, okay, I guess the other thing I wanted to say was that there is a very important demonstration in Benton Harbor, and Reverend Pinkney, do you want to tell that's this Wednesday at 11:30?
Well, here's what we do. We're going to start congregating at 10:30 in the morning at City Hall, right across from the library. We're gonna meet there at I'd like for people to get there before 11 o'clock, because 11:15 we're gonna start marching towards the PGA office, and the reason why that's so important. So when they get ready to cut the ribbon at 11:30, we'll be there to cut a couple of ribbons of our own at that time to show them that we're there also to make sure that they don't continue to take over our city. The beauty of this whole thing is that it's going to be a march not only against the PGA, but also against Whirlpool and all EFMs. That's Emergency Financial Managers, which is a dictator. They're not even elected by the people. They're placed there by the government. The governor has 72 EFMs getting ready, trained to take place, to take over every black city in the state of Michigan. But we have to take a stand.
Can I say one thing?
Go right ahead.
It was just pointed out to me that when the emergency financial manager takes over, we don't have a city government any longer.
In a way,
if you protest the EFM, the emergency financial manager, you're protesting in favor of our right to vote.
That's
because
right.
Because without a city council or city, you know. It's just a dictator.
Absolutely. He's no better than anybody else who kills and destroys people. But the point is, it's just a start. See, they use in Michigan to see what they can do around the country. See, the people here didn't say nothing at first because it was mostly black cities that they're taking over. And they figure like this, oh, it's just black folks. We're not going to stand up and fight. But now they understand it's going to be all over. You got 72 EFM trained and ready to go into 72 different cities in one state. And you know what that means? They will become dictators. They got the right to sell off all your land. But this is what this guy is doing right now. He's dissolving the fire department, the police department. He don't have our water department. That's the only revenue, the greatest revenue we had. And what they're doing this legally. You see, this is the thing that really irks me. But the people going to have to rise up, and they're going to have to say enough is enough. And listen, Libby, if you got something else to say, say it fast. We're down about 6 minutes. I'm going to get Larry, Ralph, and Mary back in there. Say something real fast.
Okay, one quick thing is that across the state from Benton Harbor in Ann Arbor, Michigan, I understand there is a city manager that's been there for a long time, named Roger Frazier. He just recently got the job of going to Lansing and being in charge of Governor Snyder. I hate to call him that, but Governor Snyder's Emergency Financial Manager Department. Now, this guy, Roger Frazier from Ann Arbor, he has run the Ann Arbor government into the ground. There's a big deficit where there was not when he started. So we now understand what it's all about. He will simply go up to Lansing, be in charge of the emergency, the EFM department, and one of the first places he'll send to EFM would probably be Ann Arbor, since he has been there and run the budget down into the ground.
Mm, that's something.
Anyhow,
Roger, on that
yep.
note, on that note, Larry, you got about a minute. Go ahead with it.
Well, again, I want to thank our wonderful audience. Remember, you are a part of this struggle, an integral part of the struggle. I just want to say also that as far as the corporate stream media is concerned, Libby, the corporate stream media is, in fact, the propaganda arm of the
mm-hmm.
corporate government. I want to say that as far as the PGA tournament, people think about golf. What I want folks to think about when they think of PGA is people of greed and arrogance. PGA.
That's right.
People of greed and arrogance. Finally, I want to end by saying whether you're in Michigan, New York, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Mississippi, California, or anywhere else you are involved in this struggle, you must stand up, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. You must stand up collectively, come together, fight, struggle together, plain living and hard struggle, all power to the people.
Amen. Ralph, go right ahead.
Yes, what you pointed out today was an example of where this country is going. They start in black communities and then carry it to white communities.
Yeah.
And you've been fighting this battle out there against the corporate giant Whirlpool from stealing the beautiful city of Benton Harbor from black people. You had a $5 million deficit, which was small. Comparatively speaking, everybody else had a much larger deficit. What do they do? Want to come in and take over your assets and turn them over to Whirlpool. And now they have passed a law, a state law, where they can go into any city because we didn't fight hard enough. We didn't
yes.
recognize that an injury to one is an injury to all. And the unions and everyone else is going to have to begin to recognize that. Stop being guilds and start being unions with the common good in mind. Thank you. Write to Lynn. We've said it, 53504, Unit 2N, P.O. Box 27137, Fort Worth, Texas, 76127, because she understands an injury to one, and she is in jail, and she's going to fight for the poor and oppressed people who are in that jail. She's bringing it to our attention. Thank you again.
God bless you. Mary, go right ahead.
Thank you, Reverend Pinckney. Everyone, thank you. I'm so glad to be on the radio talking to you on March 13th, 2011. It's important to say your date because what happens is there's censorship for people who will speak up. Don't forget the Boycott for Justice every ninth of the month throughout 2011. Please be aware that they got laws that they're considering through the Supreme Court. Please look up my article, Justice for Children. That's called Juvenile Justice, Kids for Cash. It's going to decide whether the armed police can go into your children's school and interrogate them without parental knowledge, without a warrant, without an attorney presence, and without a Miranda reading. So in other words, they want to go into your children's school, pull 9-year-olds and 10-year-olds out of the classroom. If they confess to anything, march them straight to the jailhouse, try them as adults, and have a fresh, new, young slave. So please beware that the Supreme Court is deciding whether children have rights. And look at my article. That's Mary Neal. Look me up online. The article is called Justice. It's called Juvenile Justice, Kids for Cash.
Amen. Go ahead, Libby.
Don't forget.
Go ahead, Libby.
I'm just flabbergasted by everything that was just said. I'm sorry. I don't have anything.
Okay, I'm not mad at you anyway, but I just want to let everybody know they took over the city of Benton Harbor. The city of Benton Harbor was $5 million in the red, and the county held $6.3 million of their money and would not give it to them until the EFM came to take over the city. They
wow.
were saying that the city of Benton Harbor was in the red. We knew there was money somewhere, but we didn't know where it was. And I just found this out recently that the county was holding this money up so they can come in and take over the city. If that's not corruption at its best, I'm sick.
Reverend, but did they ever pay their water bill?
Never paid the water bill and never will. They don't have to because who's going to enforce it? But here's the thing, here's what we got to do. We the people, we have to show these folks that we're serious about what we're doing. I wish everybody could just come and be there because this attack that we're going to put on them Wednesday is going to set the tone for the whole summer. Either we're going to intimidate them or we're not going to intimidate them. But I'm ready to move this thing forward. And on that note, we have just ran out of time. And I just want to say this to you, Ralph. You tell Lynn, anybody she wants us to feature on the show, just send us the information. Larry, this is the month we want Black Panther people, females, whatever you come up with, political prisoners, that's what we'll use. And Mary, we want to make sure that you call in and keep reminding people about the 9th of every month. Libby, we really appreciate your update. You set the tone for what we're trying to do. And on that note, I got to say goodnight.
All right, love you all.
Talk to y'all soon.
Love you all.
All right, take care now. I love you. And the other thing, Larry, beautiful.
Yes.
Beautiful. That I tell you, the film, everybody got to watch. And you know, those are folks
brother.
Who I sent it to and they didn't watch it, shame on you. Talk to you later.
All right, bro.
Bye now.